And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
That's gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to be with you today. We have a lot on tap for the show. We'll be talking the NFL draft. Chicago Bears sideline reporter Mark Grody will join us to talk about that and more here on the show. Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago was at Hallis Hall covering this, and he will join us on the show. Also, Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline USA Network will talk around the NFL and the draft. And John Poulter, our professor of sports, will cover the hockey playoffs and Major League Baseball and a little soccer at the end of the show. But the Packers, with their first pick, take Jair Alexander. He's a defensive back out of Louisville, one of the fastest guys in the draft. And they traded down initially, then they traded back up in the first round and got Alexander. Here is Packers GM Brian Gutekunst.
Really versatile, talented, confident player, and tough. And that's, I think, his play style is the is kind of what, you know, what we want defined in a player. So
you had Edmonds in here for a visit, and you had James in here for a visit. Mm-hmm. So I assume that you like those guys. Ultimately, what was the decision, Alexander over those guys? Was it merely just a draft pick, or was Alexander your guy?
You know what? All those guys were good players, and we liked them. I think for us, it was just that was the choice that we made. I think what we thought was best for the Green Bay Packers at that time. You know. We would have been happy with either one of those players as well, but we just thought this one was something that we couldn't pass up.
Three more, please.
I liked his aggressiveness. I like his competitiveness. He plays with a passion for the game. He's certainly not afraid, to accept challenges. So yes, those things we look for in all the players that we try to acquire. But I don't know if we need to really instill it in our defense. We have a lot of guys like that, but it's certainly something that attracted us to him.
The Chicago Bears pick Roquan Smith, linebacker from Georgia, in the first round. Here's Bears GM Ryan Pace on Smith.
Roquan not only is a great player, but he has outstanding intangibles. That's a huge strength of his, and it was a very attractive quality for us. We spent a lot of time with him. We obviously interviewed him at the combine. We brought him into Chicago for a 30 visit. Matt, myself, Josh Lucas took him out to dinner. He's everything you're looking for as a player, but then also his makeup, and it's huge for us. Again, the first thing that comes to mind is his instincts, his play speed, and his physicality. I mean, he hits with impact. So those are things that jump out.
And here Roquan Smith talks about joining the Bears.
I feel like I can be a vocal guy, but not a rah-rah guy, all up in your face all the time. I feel like I can... You have to know your teammates to be able to affect them. I feel like, but my main thing, I lead by example. And, you know, and guys tend to follow guys that, you know, do the things the right way and, you know, go about their business. And, you know, I feel like guys respect that because I know I have the utmost respect for individuals that do things the right way.
We got a lot on the program today, so hang with us. We're talking Bears draft next on the show with Steve Leventhal from Chicago and Mark Grody, sideline reporter for the Bears, on the Sports Report.
This is Bart Shore, and I want to invite you to visit InternetFM.com. This great site has online stations streaming rock music 24/7, hundreds of podcasts with on-demand music, sports, and talk programs. Also get daily features, music news, and useful links. Our radio stations have limited or no commercials at all. InternetFM.com. It's totally free. No sign-up required. If you love music, then InternetFM.com is for you. Also on Facebook at InternetFM.
Hey, Packer Dave.
This is Bob Costas. You know, it's one thing to root for the Packers. It's one thing to relive the glory of the Ice Bowl and the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. It's quite another to have your entire life narrated by John Facenda. Quite another to live by every precept set down by Vince Lombardi when you're just a guy wearing a cheesehead hat and sitting behind a microphone. You're not Bob Skoronski. You're not Fuzzy Thurston. You're not even Chuck Mersine. Packer Dave, get a life. Please.
You know, I wear that cheesehead hat on the off-season shows, too, just like right now. I am Packer Dave. It is the Sports Report. Now we bring in from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago, Steve Leventhal. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. How are ya?
All right. Doing fine. And you were at the Bears draft at Halas Hall, and so was our guest also joining us in this segment. He is the new sideline reporter for the Chicago Bear flagship station, WBBM, and the Chicago Bears radio network. He is Mark Grody. Mark, welcome back to the show.
What's going on, guys? Good to be back on the show.
All right. Congrats on your new gig. Tell us about how that happened quick.
Yeah, no, I went from being the Cubs pre- and post-game host. One day, my boss called me in for a meeting and said that they were doing a trade, as in I would be going to the Bears, and Zach Zabin, who had been doing the Bears, would be going to the Cubs. And that's short of it.
And the player to be named later.
Very good.
Yeah, exactly.
You joined your boss for a meeting or a beating? I didn't quite get that. I thought it was a meeting, wasn't it? Meeting.
Well, you could probably characterize it as either or. Yeah, the beating usually comes after the meeting. There's the meeting, then the beating. Yes.
Okay, and real quickly, Steve. Do you know what WBBM stands for? Any idea?
We better beat Mark.
Nope, that's not it.
Wow, that's pretty good, Steve.
It traces back to 1911 when Leslie and Ralph Atlas, owner of the Mallory Battery Company, world's best battery company. Battery maker, world's best battery maker, WBBM. And then in later years, they changed it to say we broadcast better music. That's straight from Wikipedia. But did you know that, Mark? Be honest with me. World's best battery maker?
I had no idea, and I wasn't sure if you were telling the truth about that or if that was actually true. But I'm going to go ahead and believe you and Wikipedia.
We better broadcast Mark. There you go. That's the new one.
It is WBBM.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. That's kind of a letdown, actually. It doesn't sound too prominent when you put it that way.
World's best battery maker from 1911.
There's all kinds of stuff like that about Chicago stations.
Hey, you know, I'm thinking maybe battery making was a big deal in 1911.
It was. Okay, let's look at the Bears draft now, Mark. And they picked linebacker Roquan Smith in the first round. Your thoughts there?
I think it's a good pick. I think it was a pick that, a lot of people, anybody who asked me along the way, I was saying the Bears need to take a linebacker, whether it was inside or outside, and they got themselves a really good, looks like a guy who could probably play pretty quickly, possibly start pretty quickly. So I thought it was a good pick. You get a really fast ball hawking linebacker who everybody talks about the intangibles and his leadership skills and all that kind of stuff, and it sounds like he's a safe pick in that he's not a project and that he's probably a plug and play player. So I like the pick, Packer Dave.
Okay. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I said not only that, but the way the draft played out, the four quarterbacks going early, it almost set everything up. I mean, they couldn't have worked out better for the Bears, and they didn't have to trade up or anything like that, or they didn't have to make any moves. And they got probably the player that fit them the most. Aside from maybe getting an offensive lineman, I mean, that defense is only going to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, with the moves that they made in the offseason, obviously with the big one being signing the very talented wide receiver Allen Robinson, and you get Taylor Gabriel and the tight end Trey Burton. You made a bunch of offensive moves in free agency. So all signs pointed towards making the Bears' defense better. A defense which was good last year. It wasn't dominant in any way, shape, or form, but it was good. It was, you know, statistically a top 12 defense, actually. But it certainly didn't feel that way just because you didn't see them making the dominating plays. And hopefully with the addition of Roquan Smith, they'll be able to. And to your point, Steve, yeah, I mean, the Bears kind of anticipated that they were going to have a really good shot at a position player not being a quarterback at number 8. You know, I think Quentin Nelson was definitely somebody that was on their board, but he obviously went a couple of picks earlier to the Indianapolis Colts. So once he went, then you just knew it was going to be defense, and that's obviously the guy that they valued most this side of Bradley Chubb, I'm sure.
Yeah, outside of the kid from NC State, Chubb, that was, you know, he's probably one of the best players, and you saw that on every one of those mock drafts in terms of top players available.
Mark Grody with us. He is the sideline reporter for WBBM in Chicago and the Chicago Bears Radio Network. Okay, want to just move on to that job a little bit, Mark, if you don't mind talking about it. So
sure.
You're going to be on the sidelines there during the games, talking with the players, coaches coming on and off at halftime and that type of thing. So how do you prepare for a job like this, I guess? It's something different.
He gets a lot of heavy jackets and
I'm asking
fleece
Mark, Steve, sit back.
Yeah, I got to go to Walgreens to buy those hand warmers, those little things that you stick in your gloves. And yeah, there will be some heavy clothery that will be purchased. In terms of other prep for a job like that, you know, I've never done any kind of sideline reporting. So I think it's just going to be a lot, obviously, you know, a ton of just prep on the game. You know, my goal will be to try to find out something that other people, that the audience doesn't know and wouldn't know and didn't discover during the week. As we all know, during a football week, whether it's with the Bears or with Green Bay, presumably every little bit of minutia comes out during the week in terms of what the players are saying and every single angle for a preview in that respective game. And I think it's going to be my job to find something, some little nugget of information that wasn't discovered during the week. And obviously there's all the other things that come with being a sideline reporter in terms of, as Steve mentioned, you know, talking about the weather, conditions, wind, things like that, injuries of
injuries.
Players,
injuries.
You know, idiosyncrasies that are going on the sidelines.
Well, do we have any sense as to whether Coach Nagy is going to be, you know, like some of his predecessors where they were super secretive about these injuries, or has the NFL kind of told them that we got to be a little more transparent?
The Bears have a new coach.
So far. What's that?
The Bears got a new coach, Steve?
Yeah, where were you, sleeping or something?
Oh, man, this offseason. Yeah. So hard to keep track of stuff.
Hey, man.
Go ahead,
Mark. Bears are moving and shaking, Packer Dave.
I knew that, Mark.
What's that?
I knew that. I was just testing you guys.
I know.
I was just testing you as a new sideline reporter.
Dave, you've been in that Arizona sun too long.
Yeah, if you didn't know that, then I would have been really worried. But
no, he did knew that.
What was the question, Steve?
Yeah, what's the question, Steve?
Well, whether or not the Bears are going to be, this administration, this coaching staff is going to be a little more transparent with any injuries.
Oh, well, it's so far, anyway, you know, I've been around Coach Nagy about 5 times now, maybe one fewer than that. And he's been very transparent. He's been very open. He's been very cordial, very receptive to the media. So far, so good. As I've been telling people, we don't know what he's like after an actual preseason game or a real game. We don't know what he's like after a 3-game losing streak. We don't know what he's like after a 3-game winning streak. So I will say, so far, he has been wonderful. And I guess every reporter in there selfishly is just hoping that continues based on the way John Fox was last year. I didn't cover any of John Fox era, but I watched from a distance.
Okay, Mark, good luck to you on your new job. You take care, and thanks very much for coming on the program once again. We'll do it once we get into football season.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Now we bring in from the Sports Byline USA Network. You can hear him at 10 p.m. Pacific time, Monday through Thursday at sportsbyline.com. He is Jeff Rich. And Jeff, you are an Arizona guy, but a Cleveland native. and you wind up with a couple nice first-round draft picks. So why don't you talk about those as we begin this segment of the show?
Well, you know, two top five picks, you can't really screw them up. I mean, you could, you might be able to take a player that you weren't expected to take, and, you know, if you go against the mocks, you're going to get killed in the court of public opinion. Or if you just simply are a team that's been 1-31 over the last two seasons, you're going to get killed in the court of public opinion, because where do the Browns screw things up? They don't draft well, and they've never figured out that quarterback position ever since they came back into the league in 1999 as an expansion team.
Well, Jeff, okay, do you think they took the best quarterback available in the draft?
I think that they took the quarterback that they wanted. I mean, that's, you know, that's the obvious thing to say. I, you know, I have different opinions. I think that Josh Rosen going 10 to the Cardinals is a steal if you get, you know, and it's all about getting past those red flags. I mean, you know, Josh Rosen, I don't really care about the attitude questions or the narrative that's been created because he's this entitled rich kid. And there are Manziel comparisons to draw. You do that with Baker Mayfield with his height because it's similar to Johnny. But, I think that that's kind of a lazy take. I think that the, you know, among the top three guys, among Mayfield, Rosen, and Sam Darnold, I think that there were red flags that you could get past, and I also think that you know, there's a chance that all three could be successful in this league.
All right, Jeff, well, let's hear from Cleveland Browns GM John Dorsey.
We got two quality players here, I truly believe. I think with Baker Mayfield, what we have is a guy who we talked about, who wins the game of football, is ultra-competitive, is revered by his teammates and anybody who has ever been around him. This is a guy that has earned everything he has ever had from high school to college and now up here. He is a winner. He's competitive. He really is. And then Denzel Ward. I mean, with Denzel Ward, he is one of those very unique and gifted players. He is, as you all know, with Ohio State, it's zero press man coverage. I talked to some coaches here earlier this week, and they were telling me certain things about him. Great kid, loves the game of football, exceptionally fast with the change of directions, incredible ball skills, and I couldn't be happier in the position we are right now with regards to the acquisition of these two players moving forward.
Okay, now let's look down the draft here a bit. The New York Giants pick Saquon Barkley, running back from Penn State, and he goes number two in the draft. A lot of people thought he was the best player, though, Jeff.
I'm not a lot of people on this one, and I'm not necessarily dooming Saquon Barkley to this fate. I think that he could be a great contributor in this league. However, I think there's a precedent, and his name is Reggie Bush. Forget the house for his parents and any kind of scandal he was involved with USC, and just simply look at it as, what kind of player are you getting in Saquon Barkley? How is it different from Reggie Bush? Because it took about Reggie Bush about 9 years into his career before he started, running the ball between the tackles and being an effective three down back. I like Saquon Barkley for kick returns, and I think that situationally he's going to do a great job catching the ball for you out of the backfield. But, you know, what is Saquon Barkley? You know, I don't think Saquon Barkley is Ezekiel Elliott or Todd Gurley.
But he's still a pretty good all-purpose back. And like you said, you can use him on third downs. You can use him on the special teams play. So he certainly brings a lot to the table.
I agree with that. And just because I'm not overly – I'm just not putting this guy in Canton, one night after he gets drafted by the Giants. I thought that this draft didn't go at all like I thought it would. I thought that Darnold was basically going to the Browns no matter what, and everything else was all smoke and mirrors. But the rumors about Baker Mayfield were a lot more than rumors that just surfaced on the morning of the draft. And I also thought that if Darnold would fall to the New York Giants, that they'd be, that they would take him, or that they would trade out of the pick, and neither happened, obviously.
All right, let's hear from the GM of the Giants, Dave Gettleman, on Barkley.
You know, we felt Saquon was the best player in the draft. You know, in baseball, they call it a five-tool player. I don't know if I'm going to be able to come up with five tools, but I haven't seen a guy like this in a long time, and I've been running around for doing this for 30 plus years. The kid's so unique because of his size and his speed. He does, he's got the ability to string together moves, which is to string together multiple moves. He's got the ability to step on the gas. He's got the he can do what we call cross the formation. You know, there's a lot of good backs in this league. They don't have the speed to go all the way across the formation. He's got that ability. We all know he can catch the heck out of the rock. He's smart in blitz pickup. He sees it. And that's probably the biggest issue that all these young runners have. And at the end of it, he's powerful. He runs through tackles. He runs through hits.
You mentioned Sam Darnold going to the Jets, Jeff. And your thoughts on that pick?
Hey, I think it's a good pick for the Jets. Todd Bowles is in a position. The only thing that he doesn't help you do is win immediately. Sam Darnold, going into this draft, you know, we knew that he was raw. We knew that he could have used another year going back to school. The red flag about the turnovers is very real. I think that's something that he could grow out of, unlike the seventh pick and his accuracy issues, that are going to plague the Buffalo Bills and continue to hold the Buffalo Bills down.
Well, yeah, I saw a lot of Darnold games, obviously, because I've got the USC, Kool-Aid here in this house. And he certainly can thread the needle, but at times he can make some really dumb plays.
I think he has the potential to be great, but I don't think he's there yet.
And he fumbles the ball. He's got to learn to hang on to the ball, especially in this league, when he's not going to have the kind of time in the pocket that he had, you know, with USC. He's got all Americans and completely across the line.
You know, his team wasn't as great in 2017 as they were the first year in 2016 when he took over for Max Brown there. I think that everything you said, there's some credence to that, certainly. I think that the turnover thing, again, is correctable by instruction.
Okay, here's Jets GM Mike Maccagnan, and he comments on the pick of Sam Darnold.
Early on, we actually decided to make the move right after we went through free agency. We had a pretty good feeling there was going to be some good players potentially there for us. Sam was one of them. But early on, I think the early projections had Sam kind of going one, and we thought maybe, if that's how it fell in with it. But we thought that we still have some really good players we felt very strongly about available for us at three. And then as it sort of unfolded, the fact that Sam, who we really liked quite, through this whole process, we're very consistent in how we felt about him. When it looked like we had a chance to slide to us, we were pretty excited to take him.
Okay, Jeff, and finally, the Arizona Cardinals get Josh Rosen, quarterback from UCLA. Carson Palmer is done, and now they've got Sam Bradford for the interim, but looks like they've got their quarterback of the future. Your thoughts here?
I think that Josh Rosen is not just the quarterback of the future, but also the quarterback of the present. I expect him to outplay Sam Bradford and Mike Glennon and have that opportunity to start for Steve Wilks in week one for the Arizona Cardinals as they play their first game of the post-Arians era.
So the Cardinals picked up Glennon. Oh, man, what a turd he was. I'm sorry, with all due respect. For whatever they paid him, it was about $17,999,000 too much.
Glennon's a guy that reminds me a lot of Lane Kiffin in that he just continues to fall up. He shouldn't have been picked as high as he was by Tampa. He shouldn't have been signed by the Bears when they were going to start Trubisky in week four. And what an absolute waste that pick is, or that pickup is for the Arizona Cardinals. Especially, you had Drew Stanton. You could have used Drew Stanton as a bridge to your rookie, and I don't think you need to do that with Rosen. I think that Rosen and Mayfield come to this league perhaps game ready to start in week one.
Well, you can say it was a wasted pick. You can say it was a turd, Steve.
Okay, well, maybe I'm being a little harsh.
He's an albatross. See? I know you don't care about the fate of the Chicago Bears, but there are some people that do and had to tolerate the Mike Glennon experience for how many games last year, Leventhal?
Oh, too many. Think about that. $18 million. You could have signed an offensive lineman. You could have gotten another wide receiver.
All right. A turd.
You could have got some extra tackling dummies. I mean, there's a lot you could have done with that money rather than throw it at Mike.
He's got a mother. He's got a family. I hope they're not listening to this show. Odds are they're not. Well, Jeff, thanks very much for coming on the show and covering the draft with us. Jeff Rich from the Sports Byline USA Network. Catch him Monday through Thursday, 10 p.m. at sportsbyline.com. Jeff, we'll talk to you a little bit down the road. You have a great remainder of your day, and thanks for coming on the show.
I look forward to our next conversation. You guys can follow me on Twitter at JeffRichTalks.
Awesome. Okay, we'll be back with a lot more here on the show. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sports Report. He's Steve Leventhal. I'm Packer Dave. Back with more after this.
You know, sometimes when you compare prices on products, you think to yourself, what difference does it make? The rates are all about the same anyway. But sometimes the rates are very different. Let me give you an example where there's a huge difference in pricing between companies. Vehicle protection plans. Look, if your car is 4 years or older, having a vehicle protection plan is a no-brainer. The trick is not to overpay for it. Here are the facts. The average price of a vehicle protection plan is $2,800, while the price of a TOCO warranty vehicle protection plan for most vehicles is just $1,500. The average down payment on a vehicle protection plan is $299. With TOCO warranty, there's no down payment. The average monthly payment on a vehicle protection plan is more than $160 a month. With TOCO, the average monthly payment is just $49. To get a highly rated vehicle protection plan at a great low rate, call TOCO Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Packer Dave. This is Wayne Larrabee, the voice of the Packers. I know you know a lot about the Packers, but let me hang on to the job for a few more years before you take over, okay?
First and 10 at the 9-yard line. Wait, excuse me. That doesn't work that way. First and goal from the 9-yard line. Aaron Rodgers takes the snap, rolls left, throws it to Jordy Nelson. Oh, that's right. He's with the Raiders now. Throws it to Devontae, and it's a Packer touchdown. And Devontae Adams leaps into the crowd.
First and 10 from the 9.
Okay, I made a couple mistakes when I was trying that. It's a hard job, but maybe I'll take it.
Par for the course.
Now, from our professor of sports in Toronto, Ontario, we bring him in. He is John Poulter. John, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thanks, guys. How about the two of you?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Steve?
Oh, it's all good. I haven't talked to John in a while, so this is kind of fun.
Okay, well, the excitement begins, John. NHL hockey. We are down now to Pittsburgh and Washington, the San Jose Sharks, and the Vegas Golden Knights. They leave the loss out of there. So it's the Vegas Golden Knights. Winnipeg and Nashville and Boston and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And your Maple Leafs push Boston to 7 games. That must have been exciting in Toronto, even though you did lose the series.
Yes, it was very exciting. Unfortunately, Game 7, the Leafs went through their usual El Foldo act in the third period of Game 7, couldn't protect a lead. In 2013, it was a 4-1 lead they couldn't protect. This week, it was a 4-3 lead. And the tying goal was kind of unfortunate. It was a clean shot. There was certainly no issue with the shot. I thought the goaltender probably should have had it. But it looked to me from the face-off that the puck hit a skate on its way back to the point. So it sort of went to a different player than they had anticipated, but there was no question that the shot was there and was deserving. The real killer was the DeBrusk goal where he came down the right wing and basically made Gardner look like a pylon, and Gardner's a guy that can really skate. I thought Anderson, the goaltender, should have had that one as well. And unfortunately, by that time, the gas was out of the tank and it just kind of got worse from there. But considering that, you know, 3 years ago, the Leafs were the laughingstock of the league. They were bottom of the league. They were in tank mode. To get to this point against a good Boston team that fought for the Eastern Conference title up until the very last game of the season, I'm a little upset about the way that it ended, but not surprised that they were exited on the first round. So onward and upward, chance to build a little bit more each year, and they're heading in the right direction, and it's been a long time since we've been able to say that about the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So, John, last week I was on vacation. One of my buddies is a big Caps fan, so we watched pretty much several games in that series, and boy, they made a nice comeback from being down out of the chute.
Yeah, it was a funny series. The first four games were all won by the road team. And then the Capitals won game five at home, and then they won game six in Columbus. So five out of the six games were won by the road team, which is a little surprising. Home ice is not what it used to be in terms of an advantage, but Washington kind of blew it on Thursday night. They were up 2-0 early, and they got a minute into the first period. They were up 1-0. They extended that to 2-0 the first minute of the third period. And they really should have been home free at that point, but they let Pittsburgh back in the game. Then Pittsburgh played a great road game, great third period, protected the lead well, and escaped with a 3-2 win, mostly on the strength of the goaltending of Matt Murray. And we've said all season that the Penguins will go as far as Matt Murray is healthy. If he doesn't get to the rink because he's hurt or whatever, I think the Penguins have a problem. But if he's healthy with the rest of the cast that they have, Pittsburgh's got a real shot at winning three in a row.
John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, with us. And Steve, you were on vacation last week. John was on vacation down here in Arizona not too long ago, and we went out, had some pizza with our wives, and took in a Milwaukee Bucks loss in their playoff series. But, John, they're still alive, Game 7. I know we're not talking basketball in this segment, but I thought you should know how excited I am.
I didn't see the game, but I did see the score.
All right, well, they're going to Game 7. It was a good time seeing you, by the way. Yes, Steve.
No, likewise.
I was just going to say it was a great piece on 60 Minutes about the Greek Freak.
Yeah, that was the same night that the Stormy Daniels interview was on, huh? What a great lead in.
We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel now, guys, when we go to that.
All right. So these four series going on, give us your pick on each of the series.
I think Tampa Bay is probably a little bit too strong, a little bit too fast, a little bit too deep for Boston. I don't think that Boston's goaltender, Tuukka Rask, is as focused as he could be, should be. I got to go with Tampa in that series. Washington and Pittsburgh, boy, I tell you, that's a toss-up. The fact that Pittsburgh won the first game in Washington last night clearly gives them the leg up in that series. They've won the one road game they have to win because Washington has four of the seven games at home if need be. I don't think we've seen the end of that yet. I wouldn't be surprised to see Washington come back and win game two. And I think we're looking at a six or seven game series there. I've always said that Ovechkin disappears in the playoffs. Not quite so much this year as usual, but I still think Pittsburgh's a better team. So I'm going to go with Pittsburgh there. Vegas and San Jose, Thursday night, Vegas really put it to San Jose 7-0 and gave up four goals in the first period. That's more than San Jose gave up in their first round series against Anaheim. So those Vegas Golden Knights are certainly standing that Western Conference on its ear. I look for that to be a good series. I think that's at least a six-game series as well. I think the advantage probably goes to Vegas with home ice, so I'm going to go with Vegas in seven. Perhaps the best series, and the only Canadian team still left in the playoffs, is the Nashville-Winnipeg series. The top two teams in the Western Conference in terms of points, Nashville first overall in the NHL in terms of points, President's Trophy winners. That's going to be one exciting game. You got two fast, speedy, skillful teams, both with great goaltenders. That could go either way, and I'm looking at that as a six or seven game series. But at the end of the day, I think Nashville's just got that little bit more experience. I'd love to see Winnipeg do it. It's a great story. Winnipeg and Vegas would be just an unbelievable story in a Western Conference final. But I really, deep down, think that Nashville has probably got just a little bit too much experience for Winnipeg. So I'm going to go with Nashville in six.
So how does that work? Do all the Canadian fans then get behind the one remaining team, or is there still sort of a bit of a rivalry among the Canadian fans?
Well, there's still a little bit of a rivalry, Steve, but Winnipeg is such a great story in terms of how the franchise sort of came in at the last minute when the Atlanta Thrashers folded. Winnipeg was ready. They had an arena that was ready. They had a fan base that was ready. They sold out the season ticket base in less than a half an hour. Rabid fans, very strong fans. I got to think that the majority of the country is behind Winnipeg. Perhaps not so much if it was Montreal or Toronto being the only ones left. There's still a little bit of a bias between those two teams. But I think Winnipeg is somewhat of a neutral city. So I think a lot of Canadian fans will get behind Winnipeg. More so in hockey now, and perhaps in most sports, but very definitely in hockey, a lot of people tend to follow players rather than teams. So you'll get an Ovechkin fan who will follow Washington. You'll get a Crosby fan who will follow Pittsburgh, and so on and so forth. So I got to think that the majority of Canadians are going to go Winnipeg. Certainly would be a great, great story and a good tribute to the way that the city has supported that team.
All right, John Poulter with us, our professor of sports from Toronto. Let's move to Major League Baseball right now. And you and I have been to a few D-backs games. They're doing great. They're at 17-7 right now. And we've been to a few Blue Jays games in Toronto there, John, and they stand at 14-10. So we'll touch on those two teams in a bit. But let's look at the NL Central. And like a lot of times, those teams bunched up again, St. Louis, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and the Cubs, two games separating those teams from top to bottom. And so Milwaukee now in their last 10 games has won 8 of them and has really come on strong. Your thoughts on the NL Central?
Well, as you've mentioned, and historically, that's always been a very close race, and this year is no different. Cardinals and Milwaukee, basically in a virtual tie. Cardinals 15-9, Milwaukee 16-10, both 8-2 in their last 10. Very close in terms of their road records and home records as well. Both 8-4 on the road. So I think we're in for a real dogfight there. Yes, the Pittsburgh started out very, very well. They're starting to slip back a little bit. They're only 3-7 in their last 10. So they may be starting to find their level. The Cubs, to me, is the big surprise there because they're 12-10. They're struggling. They're 4-4 at home. They're 8-6 on the road. Maybe part of that problem is the fact that they've only played 8 games at Wrigley Field, which I haven't done the math, but it looks to me from looking at the standings that that might be the least number of home games in the major leagues that any team has played. Let's kind of discount Cincinnati. They're once again off the map. 5-20, 10.5 games out. We're not even at the end of April. I gotta think it's going to be a long season in Cincinnati. They've kind of put their future on young pitching, and they're trying to develop young pitching. And I've got to be a little concerned from their standpoint that if that doesn't work out, I don't know what their plan B is, because Cincinnati's never been a team that goes out and spends big money. So I think there's going to be some struggles in Cincinnati. I think Pittsburgh is going to slip a little bit. So at the end of the day, I think we're going to see the Cubs, Brewers, and Cardinals in a pretty good dogfight there for whatever postseason representation we can get out of that division.
So, John, I mean, have you seen what our weather's been here in Chicago for the last 3 or 4 weeks?
Crazy cold. And it hasn't been pleasant. And obviously the White Sox are affected by this. I know you and I chatted by phone the day that the White Sox opener was scheduled, and you were kind of shivering even just talking about it. It was that cold. So you've had a bad spell. They've had a bad spell here in Toronto as well. Fortunately, I was away for 3 weeks of it, so I didn't get to experience that. But some of the horror stories I'm hearing from friends, neighbors, and family, it hasn't been a whole lot better here. So let's hope that when the calendar turns to May, we're in better shape.
It's about... going to be about 90 today in Arizona. So I'll think of you guys when I'm at the pool. I really will.
Well, Dave, we certainly appreciate that. And, what can we say? You know, you live the life of luxury. It's something we all aspire to.
Get back to me in August when it's about 120 there and it's a nice balmy 79, 80 degrees here.
Yeah.
Hey, Brainiac. I live in Niagara Falls.
Dave has the sense to go away from there at that point in time. You know, I mean, he gets out of town when it gets that crazy.
Run, yeah, run.
Steve forgets. He forgets. He doesn't think that far. Okay, let's look at your Blue Jays at 14-10, John.
Started out very well. And, once again, they're dependent on their starting rotation. They hadn't lost a series up until the weekend, and now they've lost 2 in a row. They lost 3 out of 4 at Yankee Stadium. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Boston Red Sox. Could have won 2 out of 3 against the Red Sox quite easily. The Thursday night game could have gone either way. I'm not sure that the Blue Jays have what it takes to get there. Hopefully they'll give it a heck of a good run, but they're competing with some real heavyweights in the Yankees and Boston. Everybody in the game that you talk to recognizes that we got two powerhouses there that can spend money at will. It's pretty hard for the rest of the league to compete. So the Jays just have to hang in there. They're only 5 games out. They're 1 game out in the wild card. They've slipped to third place, 5-5 in their last 10. Yankees right now, the ones that are on a tear, they're 8-2 in their last 10. They've won 6 in a row, and they're still 4 games behind the Red Sox. So the Red Sox have got to come back to the pack. I think they will over time. You don't play 792 baseball all season, which is what the Red Sox are playing now. I think that's going to be a much tighter division than it looks right now.
And a surprise in the West with Arizona at 17-7, John. I don't think anybody saw that coming.
Well, I think to some extent, Dave, people did see it coming, but perhaps not to that extent. The big question mark was how they were going to replace the bat of J.D. Martinez, who they picked up at the trade deadline last year and basically took the team on his back to the playoffs. I think what's really helped the Diamondbacks this year is the fact that the other teams in that division have all been struggling in some way, shape, or form. Every one of them is 500 or less at home. Colorado's 5-7. The Dodgers, surprisingly, 7-8. The Giants, 5-5. San Diego, 4-10. So, you know, you don't play good baseball at home, you're going to struggle a little bit. And the Diamondbacks have played 750 baseball at home. They're 9-3, and they're 8-4 on the road. So, you know, they've played well all season. Clearly, a month doesn't make a season, and they've got some pretty tough series coming up against the Dodgers and the Giants, and to some extent Colorado within the division. So let's take another look at it around Memorial Day or even the end of May, and let's get a better read on it then. But certainly what we've seen in the first 4 weeks of the season from a Diamondback standpoint has been extremely positive and extremely promising.
So, Dave, I'd like to give a shout-out to our colleague Cheryl Ray Stout. You know her? Her nephew, Mike Stout, just got called up to the show. He's a relief pitcher for the Kansas City Royals. So, John, keep an eye out for Mike Stout and see if he does anything or if he ends up bouncing back down to the minors. But that's kind of cool, you know somebody who actually has a relative in the show.
Yeah, right, and Kansas City is probably not a bad spot for somebody to break in right now because it's a team that has a reasonably good core. They're not expected to compete, so there's not going to be a lot of pressure there. He's going to get some playing time. That actually might work out well for him if he's used correctly.
Now let's move on to soccer as we wrap up the show, John. And I know you and Steve like to talk about this, so what is what is big in the world of soccer right now?
Well, looking at the English Premier League, we all know that Manchester City has basically been running away with that since about the fourth or fifth week of the season, and they did finally clinch it last week after a couple of hiccups around a bad European Champions League tie. The real excitement in the English Premier League is in two spots. It's in the second, third, fourth, and fifth spots where we've got four teams that are basically jockeying for the two automatic places in Europe, and the third spot, the fourth place team, goes into the Champions League playoff. So there's a lot of money involved in that. So Manchester United and Liverpool look to have the two top spots pretty well locked up, barring a complete disaster. Tottenham and Chelsea are looking to fight for that fourth spot, and that's something that's very big to both of those teams. But the real challenge in the Premier League is down at the other end. The bottom three teams go down, and right now nobody is mathematically eliminated, but some of them are awfully close. Three games to go. West Brom was sitting there with 25 points, Stoke City with 29, and Southampton with 29. Southampton does have an extra game in hand because they played the FA Cup semi-final last week, so their game was postponed. But even Swansea in 17th place is only 4 points ahead of that group. So there's a lot of teams that are borderline, a lot of teams that really need to get a win to sort of satisfy their championship hopes for next year. As it sits right now, it's only the top nine teams out of that 20-team league that are guaranteed to stay top. Leicester City in ninth place can't be beaten. But anybody from Newcastle in 10th down to West Brom at the bottom could conceivably go down. It's unlikely that some of those teams with 38 and 41 points are going to go down, but mathematically it could still happen. I think one of the real interesting stories this season has been the rise of Everton. When Sam Allardyce was appointed manager, I think they were third or fourth from the bottom. And now you look at them and they're sitting there in eighth place, and they've definitely got their Premier League status confirmed for next year. So they've done a very good job in turning what looked like it could be a disaster into a pretty successful season. And if they can finish top 10, I don't think anybody would complain about that, because at the start of the season, it looked like they had a chance to go down. But, you know, getting back to this bottom three, bottom four, even bottom five with Huddersfield Town, maybe even bottom six with West Ham United in there too, it's going to be a dogfight, and there's so much money involved in that that, you know, nobody wants to go down. The size of the checkbook in the championship is a heck of a lot less in terms of TV money, and that doesn't attract good players and it doesn't attract fans. So staying up is basically a lifeline for some of these teams.
Yeah, think about that. You know, West Ham at one point, they were down there in the relegation zone, and I'm thinking, you know, they're playing in an 80,000 seat stadium. The league, or the city, built it for them. You know, they're not going to put too many fannies if they're playing in Champions League. I mean, in second division in a huge stadium.
Well, and Crystal Palace is another success story. I mean, if you look at when they fired their manager, I know they hadn't won a game. I don't even think they'd scored a goal at that point. And they're certainly not by any means home free yet, but they're in 14th place with 35 points. And looks like they're going to stay up, which is a big story. And, you know, Crystal Palace is not a big team either. It's from a very much a working class part of London. They rely very much on ticket revenue. There's not an awful lot of chance of European football at Crystal Palace. Southeast London, as I say, a very blue collar part of town. It's important for them to stay up in terms of their survival. Huddersfield, very much the same thing. Huddersfield, a market town in West Yorkshire, hasn't experienced top flight football for many, many years, and it would be important for them to stay up. So, you know, lots of success stories, lots of teams that we didn't think were going to do real well have done well. Perhaps the biggest surprise is Burnley in seventh place, sitting there with 53 points. Top flight football for next year guaranteed. I think they've done a great job in Burnley, and Burnley again is very much a blue collar town and dependent on putting butts in the seats. Not going to be a lot of European football there.
All right, John Poulter from Toronto. Great info on hockey, on baseball, and on soccer here on the Sports Report. John, thanks very much, and we'll do it again a few weeks down the line, all right?
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Always always fun to chat with you. And Dave, say hello to the pool for me while you're there today, please.
I will. I'll think of you as I'm putting that suntan lotion on my left upper shoulder. And then I'll think of you when I'm on the right, Steve, okay?
Just tell Pedro not to miss any spots.
Take care. And we want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Sports Report. Remember, you can get us at internetfm.com and kwwradio.com. During the NFL offseason, we do one show per month, so we appreciate you listening. So for John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, for Mark Grody, for Jeff Rich, and Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting, I'm Packer Dave saying thanks a lot, take care, have a good one. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get the bears, scumbag.
Goodbye.
Tell you what, dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless.
club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies, carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.